Good morning. My name is Greg Frank. I'm the hearings officer. We're hearing the case before us this morning, which is case number 212-0004. And what I'm going to do to start with is I'll start on this side with the city representative. First name, last name, spell your last name, and give us your work mailing address, please.
Mitchell R. McKee, Senior Housing Inspector with City of Portland Neighborhood Inspections, spelled M-C-K-E-E.
Sir?
William Rivera, R-I-V-E-R-A, from Forestland Construction.
Your address, please.
25221 Southeast Rug Road, Damascus, Oregon.
Sir?
Jason Rivera, with Forestland Construction. 25221 Southeast Rug Road.
All right. Let me explain generally the hearing process, and then I'm going to ask if there's any preliminary comments shortly. The hearing process usually goes as this. I will have the city give their testimony. Following the city's testimony, you would have one of the two of you would have an opportunity to ask any questions of the city representative. If the city doesn't have any further testimony other than the one representative, then I'd turn it over to you. You'd be one or both of you will be able to testify. After the first person testifies, the city representative would have an opportunity to ask questions of you as well. At the end of all the testimony, I usually allow each party to summarize kind of where they like to see me go with this process. And then in many of the cases, although not in all cases, I will make a decision today. It's similar to a court proceeding in that you only get to talk when it's your opportunity and you get to ask questions occasionally. But it's similar to a court situation, except that it's a little bit more informal. I'm not wearing a robe. You're not in the courthouse, so it's just a step down. The document that I'm most concerned with today, we sent a copy of the documents to the appellant, to the respondent.
Yes.
Okay. You should have a copy of documents somewhere along there, and we've also have an exhibit list, which I'm hoping there's a copy of that somewhere. Those are all the documents that we potentially may be considering today. And I treat this very different than court in that at this point in time, I haven't really looked at anything. I give you an opportunity to say that I should or shouldn't look at it, but really what it amounts to is I place an obligation on you. If you want me to look at something, you must ask for it to be admitted into the record. And I will give each party an opportunity to say what they think about that. So right now there's a nice, neat, and tidy list, but you'll notice over on the right-hand column it says disposition, which basically means what did we do with it? Right now we haven't done anything with it. And I won't consider it unless it becomes part of the record. And I will make sure before we're done today I know what is to be part of the record and what is not. So with that, either side, Mr. McKee, do you have any opening comments, just preliminary kind of the nature, not your case?
Sure. This is the first opportunity I've had to speak with the owners here within the last 3 or 4 months, and we were starting to make some discussions about disposition of the property. It seems like we're on the same page for the demolition issue, but we yet to have come up with timelines and method. So we're not resolved yet. So it may be just as well to go ahead with the hearing, and with the outcome of that, we can set some timelines that will work for both of us.
Who's going to be speaking on behalf of respondent? Which Mr. Rivera?
I can.
Okay, speak into the microphone, please.
I can.
Go ahead. Any preliminary comments before we get into the case itself?
No.
Any questions, Mr. Rivera, of the process or procedure that we use here?
Not yet.
Okay. Kind of give me, I'm going to pick on you just a bit. What might they be? What they might, just what might they relate to?
Well, it all depends what they tell me. I don't know, because I've never been to something like this before.
Okay, let me give you a hint, at least if this is anything like it's been. You have that package of information. Mm-hmm. If this is anything like a hearing that I've had before, and I've done this for an awful long time, if this is anything like prior hearings, Mr. McKee will review each of those documents saying why he believes there's a violation, when it occurred, how serious it is, not serious, whatever. In some respects, although Mr. McKee doesn't want to hear this, in some respects, if the documents came in, I could probably make a decision based on any comments that you might have to add to them. But theoretically, if the documents do come in the record, they almost can speak of themselves. The hearings allow the city and yourself to comment about those documents. And if there's, sometimes they include errors, sometimes Mr. McKee wants to emphasize certain things with me. But generally speaking, the documents that are in that package are what this whole proceeding is about. The one document that is of singular importance looks like this. And it's, we put exhibit numbers on the documents, and they're usually down on the bottom. That's it right there. Your left hand's on it.
This whole thing?
It's this portion. It's the city complaint. It goes on for about 3 or 4 pages.
This one here.
Yeah, that's the one. If we were saying something's important, that document's really important because it basically said you did these things or didn't do these things, or the property's in this condition or isn't in this condition, but it's talking about you and or the property, and then it goes on to say what the city wants me to do about it, all right? And under the city code, I'm given a fair amount of authority. I can impose civil penalties. I can theoretically order properties vacated. I can theoretically order properties demolished. The money and the demolishing things are probably the biggest tools that I have to work with. But those are whatever the city wants has been put in here, unless Mr. McKee modifies that today. I would use this as the template. That is the document that you must be concerned with. So anything, I mean, I understand you're not familiar with the process, and so I'm trying to explain to you that you're going to get to tell me whatever you want to tell me for the most part. Mr. McKee's going to get to tell me whatever he wants to tell me for the most part, but it's all going to, in some way, shape, or form, relate to this document. Everything else in that package should relate in some way, shape, or form to that document. So anything else you're thinking about that, because that's a really good question, or at least point that you made. Anything else you're concerned about?
No, not me.
All right. Mr. McKee raised the issue that there's a possible settlement. I'm using my word, not his. There's a possibility of a settlement in this case. Is, from your perspective, is that a possibility, a likelihood, a probability? Where do we stand on that from the Rivera side?
It sounds pretty good. We're both leaning the same. We both want the same output as far as the house goes.
Okay.
It's a timeline that we're kind of, because of the economy right now, money's tight. The work I can do, it's pain to get rid of the debris.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part right now.
All right. Let me, I'm not trying to take your case away from you, Mr. McKee.
Please.
I'd like you to look, and when I refer to Rivera, I'm referring to both of you, so either one of you can respond. I'd like, if you would, to turn to the very last 2 pages of that document, and you'll see where it says Attachment A, about 2/3 of the way down the page. So go to the first page go to that document we were looking at, and it doesn't look like you're anywhere near it. It's right at the front. All the way to the front. Keep going. No, I think, let's see. What's
Attachment A.
Does it say Attachment A?
Yeah.
All right, and then you see number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on that page. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And then on the next page, it goes through 17. All right. What I'm going to ask is, are you going to, you being collective, are you going to be arguing that one or more of those 17 things are not a violation?
As far as not being a violation, you mean that is not wrong with the house?
Yeah. That's probably a better way to put it.
It's an old house, so we're probably not going to say that the paint is not peeling. It is peeling.
Okay.
I mean, there are things wrong with it.
All right,
we know the house is a tear-down house. That was our, like I talked with him already, we originally bought a permit. We received it, and we were getting ready to demolish it, but it's financial problems that we're having with proceeding, because as far as we can, I mean, the house has been in our family for 80 years, but as far as we're concerned, tearing it down is an option. That's what we wanted.
Okay. All right.
It's finances.
I'm going to give you, Mr. McKee, I'm going to ask for your assistance in this.
Sure.
So I'd like you to review in 5 minutes, 1 through 17, summarily. In other words, we're not going to get into, if it sounds like they're disagreeing with you, put it as they're going to argue with you, they're going to have a disagreement with you at the hearing. Okay, what I want to find is, are there, out of those 17, any of those 17 or all of those 17 that they agree in fact exist? That will save everyone time here. I'm going to be back in 5 minutes. I'm going to give you 5 minutes to review that list with Mr. McKee. The ones that you're contesting, arguing about, you don't think exist, that's what I'm more concerned about than anything else, because we'll give you an opportunity to tell me why you don't believe those are a problem or are a violation, okay? So I'm going to be back in 5 minutes. I need you to go through this really quickly. Oh, go ahead.
But we can go over that because the hearings officer's back now. Which one was that?
Well, like the,
all right, we're back on the record. How are we doing? Have we made it through most of them or all of them?
I think they have a question on two of them.
Okay, why don't you tell me which ones those are, Mr. Rivera?
I guess I have a question for the front. It says number 7, the front porch lacks required height safety guardrails.
Speak into the mic. I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Number 7, it says the front porch lacks required high safety guardrails with immediate rail space so that the object no larger than 4 inches sphere can be passed through.
And what's the other one?
The front porch lacks an
which number?
Light fixture. Oh, sorry, 17. Has been removed, exposing wires.
Okay, what about the rest of them then? Any issues with the rest of them?
No, I mean, these are probably things wrong with the house.
Okay. I'm going to propose that there be a stipulation, the city and you agree, that with the exception of number 7 and 17, that you agree that the violations do exist as set forth in those numbers. Is that, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. You can disagree with me. This is one of the few times that I say, go for it. But what I'm trying to do, and it's for the sole purpose of making this move along, but it's not for the purpose of trying to take advantage of your rights. So I'm saying, do you agree that the violations do exist with the exception of number 17?
I guess I'm saying these things are things that are wrong with the house.
Okay, and I'm trying to make it stronger. I understand. You understand? I'm trying to say these constitute violations. Do they constitute, to the best of your knowledge, violations? You know, are you willing to agree that those are violations?
I didn't know there were violations till I got here. I mean, I didn't know there were codes on painting your house and stuff like that. So.
All right. What we're going to do then is we're going to proceed sort of provisionally on the basis that there's an agreement by both parties that everything but 7 and 17 are violations. What I'm going to ask then Mr. McKee to do is present his testimony, any testimony he has with relations to number 7 and 17. I understand I'm making you think on the fly here a bit and wing it, but I think those are the violations I want to concentrate on just to make sure that we have a full understanding of of why those are at least from the city's perspective, violations. When we're done with that portion, then Mr. McKee, I'm also trying to change up things a bit. I don't need you to talk about the remedies at this point, just the violations. So does anybody have any problems with proceeding on 7 and 17 as violations and getting the information on the table about those two? Because I can have him go through 1 through 17 if you'd like. No? All right. All right. Mr. McKee, would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm testimony about to give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Tell me about exhibit violations number 7 and 17, which are part of exhibit number 1.
Sure. Actually, in addition to that, violation number 5, during my testimony, I would not be able to demonstrate that based on the photographs and evidence that I have, so I want to remove that from the list as well.
Okay. So, Mr. Rivera, and I'm referring to both of you. Mr. Rivera, number 5 is out as an alleged violation, so right now we've eliminated 3 of them that were not agreed upon as violations. And 2 of them Mr. McKee is going to talk about. All right? Go ahead, Mr. McKee.
On number 7, which is the guardrail, which they were concerned about, that is actually part of the city Title 29, and it's specifically 29.30.080C, of which I have a copy here, were not otherwise required by original building codes. Porches, balconies, or raised floor surfaces located more than 30 inches above floor grade shall have guardrails. So that kind of helps you understand a little bit about where the city code comes from. On number 17, front porch lacks operable light fixture, has been removed, exposing wires. That's referenced in 29.30.190B. That, bear with me. Well, I'll be darned. This is an incorrect reference. It is not 190B. It's 29.30.190 generally. There's a statement at the beginning, all buildings used for residential purpose shall be connected to an approved source of power. Every electrical outlet fixture shall be maintained and safely connected to an approved electrical system. The electrical system should not constitute a hazard to the occupants of the building by reason of inadequate service, improper fusing, improper wiring or installation, deterioration or damage. Lack of access to a dwelling's unit breaker or disconnect switch or similar reasons. What's that saying is that even though it's not occupied and it's not connected to a power source, the fixtures still need to be maintained in an operable and safe condition. I wonder if I should also offer these exhibits into evidence at this time.
That's fine. Is there anything in the package of information, Mr. Rivera, that you do not want me to look at? I'm going to admit exhibits 1 through and including 24 into the record at this time. Mr. Rivera, either one of you, and pick one of you. I don't want both of you asking questions. Either of you have questions of Mr. McKee regarding exhibit or violations 7 or 17?
I guess the same thing I kind of asked, 7. Those... the 4 inch and stuff, this house was built 80 years ago, and I mean, those rules and regulations were not the same back then, but you're asking us to adhere to bring things up to code.
Sure. And yeah, I understand your concern about that. The building codes, you're right, they have changed over the years. A lot more restrictive these days. However, the city council has adopted this Title 29 code, which is the property maintenance code, and in it, certain things are going to be a little more restrictive than what calls for in the original building code. Certain things like, for example, smoke detectors. 80 years ago, there were not smoke detectors. Now, the city requires smoke detectors under Title 29. And certain window sizes for egress in the event of fire are required. And this is just another example of a couple of things that have changed in the code that stand outside the building code from the original construction. So it's a safety issue that the city has adopted and put into this Title 29.
So it kind of gives you permission to go to everybody's house and continually, year by year, make them upgrade their facilities?
You could look at it that way. But that's not our policy. That's not our method. That's not what we do. That's not our purpose. We act on complaints.
Go ahead. You can keep asking questions.
And I guess the 17, you know, when I what I heard from your reading is houses that are connected to electricity, and this house is not connected to electricity. And I do know that when you go to connect to electricity, they won't connect a house to electricity without doing an inspection. So they'll inspect those plugs and light fixtures and stuff before they connect it. So a loose wire without electricity is no different than a loose wire on the ground without a cut off strand of wire. I don't see how that would.
When you ask for a reconnect inspection from the electrical section, they will send out an inspector, and he'll look at the service drops and the service. He doesn't do a house inspection.
Oh, we had a house a long time ago, or not that long ago, and we called for a connect, and the inspector made us let him go in and inspect all the outlets, because if the outlets weren't up to code, he said they wouldn't let us connect because it could cause a fire when they connect it. So
really? Okay. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a dead house. I don't see how it, you know, it's no different than a scrap of wire in a yard.
Okay. Let me give you one more example. Let's say that you get squatters, they move in, and the squatters decide they need power. So, okay, well, let's get my jumper cables out and go around the meter base. They put power in the house. I mean, I see it
There's
more
no
often.
Wire to the house. They
right.
Take the wire all the way to the street.
Okay.
They'd have to have some pretty long jumper cables.
Okay. All right. Well, in this case, maybe that's true. I'm going to have to maintain, though, that this is still damaged electrical equipment on a house is still a violation of city code, whether it's occupied or has power to it or not. I'm not sure how I can further explain it.
Okay, what we're going to do here is we're going to leave this one as my decision.
Okay.
I understand you're saying there is no power there. It's like a wire a piece of wire sitting in the front yard. That's your analogy. And Mr. McKee is saying that since it's part of the residence, the house, the structure, whether or not it has electricity to it or not, still must be maintained. I think whether or not we come down to making a demolition decision based on this, if that's where we end up arguing, then we are going to be here a really long time. And I'm not diminishing the importance of either of your statements. That's not my intent. But I don't want to get hung up on these two particular issues. I certainly see your point, Mr. Rivera, and I am certainly familiar with Portland City Code on the other side. So I will simply, at this point in time, leave 7 and 17 as not resolved by me. All right. Now, what I'd like you to do here, both of you, is get this complaint thing out again, so we're back to the very same document, okay? So it should be the very first page of what you've got. You had it open before. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right, what I want you to do is look at number three, all right? I want you to look at number three. And number three has A, B, C, D, E, and a whole bunch more. On and on, third to K, all right? I want both of you to understand I have what I can and can't do, and I want you to keep that in mind when you're considering how you resolve this particular issue. First of all, I have the authority, although it's sort of like trying to push air, and it does not much happens, but I have the authority to order you to comply with the Portland City Code and fix all those things, and I can order you to do it in 30, 60, 90, whatever time. I can do that, but it's not much of a push on my part, because you could simply say that I don't care. Second thing I have the opportunity to do, and it starts, for example, in paragraph B, is that I have the ability to impose civil penalties, all right? That one starts to create some pain in some people, but the people who have no money, it's the blood out of the turnip kind of routine. They simply look at me and go, big deal. But I have the ability to impose civil penalties. Normally, what I do is that if the city has expended time to do something, I award a civil penalty in that amount. So if they've done inspections, if they had to remove garbage, trash, they had to do something with a city employee, I'm pretty agreeable with the city to do that. So I just want you to understand. So when you're starting to talk about what you can save and what you can't save or what's on the table, usually the amount expended by the city is not something it's on the table. I almost always grant that for the city if the city's requested it, okay? So just keep that in mind. City often asks for additional civil penalties. In other words, penalties that are not associated with actual costs for them, Mr. McKee's time or whatever. Those are always on the table, okay, in my opinion. Those are always on the table for me to consider whether or not I'm going to be awarding those against you. And what happens in these kinds of cases is that if I award a civil penalty, it will become a lien against the property, kind of like a mortgage or a trust deed or a contract or whatever. It becomes a lien against the property. From the respondents, from the Rivera's perspective, that's simply if there is equity left in the property, if there is equity, and that's not my judgment, that's yours, because you know it, I don't. Never seen the property. I don't know what's against it. But if there is equity in the property, what my civil penalties, in addition to the cost, those additional civil penalties start reducing your equity. Okay? And so that may not be play money, but it is getting pretty close to real money on from your perspective, is now I'm affecting affecting your money. And so keep that in mind. I have the ability to do that. There are a number of factors that I look at, but the one that's most important to me is if I, in fact, assess civil penalties, I want them to have the result or possible result, probable result, that they will affect your behavior. In other words, I want, if I say there's going to be $10,000 of civil penalties, and you say, crap, I don't want to lose that, I'll fix it. Or I'll do whatever I'm supposed to do. So it's an incentive if you think about it from that perspective. So I'm, in all likelihood, would award civil penalties for costs. The ones above that, that they're asking for, and it appears to me that they probably are asking, I think the additional civil penalty in the amount of $2,000 right now, I'm looking at paragraph B, that money's in play. In other words, that's something to keep in mind. In addition to the money, and by the way, the money I'm authorized under my code to award civil penalties up to $1,000 per day. So that adds up really quick. So I have authority to make it a pretty big number, and if you had any equity or have any equity, I can erode that or get into that really quick. So I have authority to award fairly large civil penalties. Just, I wanted you to be aware of what my limits are, and it's $1,000 a day. The next thing I have the ability to do is to order vacation. And there are two parts to that. If it's already vacant, which it sounds to me like it maybe is vacant, but if it's already vacant, then that's really not much of a threat or an incentive for you to do anything. If it's already boarded up, if nobody's living in there. But I have the authority to do that, and I have the authority to award additional civil penalties for any costs associated with the city vacating the property and relocating tenants. And that is something that gets to a lot of people, is they don't want to pay for a quote-unquote deadbeat tenant. They don't want to pay to move them. So anyway, I have the ability to do that. And the last thing that I have the ability to do is order demolition. And demolition is usually the biggest hammer that I've got in my toolbox. And if demolition occurs and the city is the one that does it, then as civil penalties, as liens against your property, are all the costs that are incurred by the city to do that demolition. And I will tell you that the city does nothing as cheap as you can. It will cost you because they add overhead, and they add all kinds of things where it gets to be ridiculous. That's my toolbox. That's what you should be looking at when you look at paragraph 3, the relief requested. That's what I can do, what I'm likely to do. And if I find the property is, I think in more real terms, attractive nuisance. In other words, it is a place where somebody could get hurt. It's really causing potential safety problems both to any occupants that might be there or surrounding properties. I will probably order it demolished. If you allow me to make the decision, I'll make the timing decisions. Okay. From your perspective, you need to keep in mind that you may want to be in control of when it's demolished because you can control the costs. You're going to lose that ability to a large degree if you give me the opportunity to make that decision. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be vindictive. I simply have the right to make that decision and how long it's going to be. What I'm going to do is then suggest to Mr. McKee and you folks that I give you a 2-week period. During that 2-week period, you come to an agreement, the two sides, as to the particulars with regard to civil penalties, with regard to vacation, with regard to demolition, and any of the other things that are in your paragraph 3. You come to an agreement and you submit to me a signed document saying we agree to those. And if it seems reasonable to me, that will be my order. In other words, my decision. So in essence, what I'm allowing you to do is make my decision for me. What's the date we're going to come back? All right. I'm going to set a hearing for 10 o'clock on the 27th of March. I'll repeat that again. Is that a date available to or not available to you folks?
I'm clear.
Okay. Mr. McKee?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Jason?
What day is that? You know,
what day?
That's a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So what I'm giving you is approximately 2 weeks to come to an agreement. You control, theoretically, your destiny, both of you, both sides. If you come back, we are only going to argue one thing, and that is paragraph 3. Okay? We're mm-hmm. only going to argue paragraph 3. In other words, what are the appropriate remedies? Because in my opinion, whether or not we have violation 5, 7, or 17, it seems to me that there's some other things on that list that are a little more serious than those. And so it would be fairly easy for me to say right now that I could probably order civil penalties. I could probably order vacation, and I could probably order demolition. I just need to have some ability to either have you agree to it, or you argue as far as what you believe to be the time frames of the appropriateness. You can argue your economics. Economics is a factor that I can consider. I'm given specific authority to consider economics, in other words, your economics, to a degree. The diving board is only so long before you fall off into the water. And so I can take in consideration economics only so much. But I certainly will take it into consideration. I'm not trying to ignore it. I'm not trying to ignore the economy. It's real. Your economics are real. But the other thing that's real is this house sounds like it's in pretty tough shape.
Can I say something?
Go ahead, sir.
I want to ask a question. Somewhere along the line, if we take care of this, okay, the problem's going to get taken care of. There's still going to be a fine of some sort, I'm assuming.
I can help with that.
Go ahead.
Once the property's torn down and we close the case on it, then even though the fines get up into the 35,000 range or whatever, we have a management analyst who is specifically working with people on the lien situation. In many cases, he can reduce it substantially, and in any event, he can set up a payment plan for the resolution as well. So that should provide some encouragement for
is
you.
Is that both of them? Because there's two different.
Okay, lean into the microphone, please.
Is that both of them? Because there's two different.
Yeah, all he would consider all the liens on the property. Is that what you mean?
My understanding of the question is, can the management analyst or this person both reduce and set up a payment plan, or is it pick one or the both?
No, because we're getting. Originally, we were taking care of everything, and then we started getting hit by two, I don't know, it was two divisions here, I guess, because there's one that was fining us for not boarding up the windows, so we did that, and then after we did that, they started penalizing us for things wrong with the property. So there was two different divisions there.
Sorry. Yeah, I think...
And that's why we kind of quit. If we didn't know what to do, we started to sink there.
It on the last page, exhibit 21.
The last page of this same document?
This one here. All the way to the back, just inside the last page.
Mr. McKee, why don't you go to that page? Give him that page.
This one?
Yeah, that's it. You'll see there are three different liens there. The first one is the housing code. That's for this list of violations. The second one is for a nuisance cleanup. And the third one is for, I'm not sure what that one's for. It's a revolving amount. That could be, I'd have to look it up to make sure. But the point is that taken together, these come to about 30,000, and the management analyst would consider all of those in his reduction and payment plan. Now, it could be that you're getting a lien from some other bureau or a bill from some other bureau, but if they lien the property, it would show up here. So this, yes, he will consider all of these.
All right, we're going to leave it at that. So do we understand what we're going to do if we come back on the 27th? We're going to talk about paragraph 3 and what I order you to do. All right? Money, vacation, demolition, and all those things in the paragraph. That's what I'm going to consider. So it will be in my hands, and you, in essence, what both of you have asked by not coming to an agreement is somebody's asked me to make that decision. I will make it, that's what I'm supposed to do. If you make the decision as a group, you make the decision, submit it to me before that date, preferably 3 or 4 days before that date so we can formally cancel the hearing. But if you can get together within the next week and come to some resolution, then that's a good thing, probably. My goal always is I want the problem to go away. From my perspective, the problem is the house is creating neighborhood issues by the standard. I want that to go away as quickly as I can. If your resolution is the quickest way we can do it, I'm a happy camper. If I have to do it, then I'm going to be looking, what does it take to get these violations corrected, or what does it take in this case perhaps to get it demolished? How can we best do that? It's not meant to be vindictive. It's not meant to be penalty. I just want it done. But what you take by giving it back to me is you take my bias that I want it done and I will push to get it done, whatever buttons I think might work to get it done. Okay? You understand? Okay. So any questions about what we're going to do on the 27th if we have a hearing?
Not for me.
Clear.
Okay. You are not the first, Mr. Rivera. You are not the first to come in here and tell me, or at least suggest that things kind of got out of hand. It gets to the point where it seems fruitless, so you kind of ignore, and then all of a sudden you come in here and we start kind of getting the process moving again. If you've got equity in this property, and like I say, I don't know, because that seems to be the biggest issue. If there really is equity, then coming to a resolution is a really good thing. If you're going to walk away from it in this world of foreclosures and everything else, maybe that's the best resolution. But my point is that if you've got something to protect, this is a very good time to protect it, because I can really be a fly in the ointment, not intentionally, but I can be the fly in the ointment and put more money and more money against it. And the managing analyst is not going to reduce mine. Whatever I impose, they're not going to reduce that. Okay? Just keep that in mind. So I'm kind of outside that scope. You have the ability here, if we can work together, you may be able to make some money on this by saving some money, okay? We'll see you back, I hope not, but we'll see you back on the 27th at 10 o'clock in the morning. If you do work out an agreement, please, if you could, just as a matter of courtesy, get it to me at least 3 or 4 days in advance.
Certainly.
Because that will allow me to make sure the hearing is canceled and everybody knows. All right,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.